talking. We're going talking today where things are popping. The Marian way, we're going to drop in on discussions of the day on the Exchange Club. Exchange Club, we're going debating. We're going to debate very loud and we'll be laughing and floating high on a cloud. Phones are ringing from listeners all around on the Exchange Club. Exchange Club, and we'll guess and goof and talk on Exchange, read, debate, and think it's Exchange. Tune in, we're on, turn on, I'm in, is on today, the Exchange Club.
And good afternoon, it is a Getaway Friday, last Friday in February 2019, and the first thing we have to do this week is take attendance. Marge is out ill today, but Marge will be back in the very near future. Charlie is still out under the weather, but I saw Charlie yesterday. He'll be back very soon, I'm sure. Brandy, you're here.
Yeah, present. Sorry, folks. You're present. Stuck with me.
Brandy's with us. And this week, sitting in as a guest panelist, Hassan Karam from the Marian Star. Hassan, so good to have you on this Friday.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So we'll have a lot of fun this week. Because there's a lot to talk about. When I sat down last night to talk about to write the subjects, there is very few things this week on the agenda that are political, which is good, but there are a lot of weird stories in general, like the Empire Star. That's the story of the day. What's his name? Smollett? Smollett?
Yeah, Jesse. I think Jesse Smollett.
Jesse Smollett. Smollett. See, I have no idea who this person is, but I've seen his picture now. And apparently, there was a big episode a couple months ago in which he was beaten up and a noose put around his neck, and he filed a report that it was a hate crime, and now, as of the last few days, we've come to find out that maybe that's not the case, and he was arrested yesterday, and he was charged. He still says he's innocent. He was released on bail, so now I guess we'll see what happens. Brandy, what do you make of this story?
It's crazy. I don't know. I mean, of course I hope that he's innocent, because doing something like this is just not good. I don't know how else to say it. It's bad.
I saw the police in Chicago yesterday, mm-hmm. the police chief. He seemed angry. Very angry about this whole situation. I thought that was a lot of emotion from a police chief. Usually you don't see that.
Well, I know there's anger from, you know, both sides of the coin, in the sense that, you know, if the allegations prove to be true and that he did, you know, file a fake report, I know some people that I, you know, friends I saw on Facebook and social media and just friends I've talked to on the phone, you know, a lot of them, they feel angry because it takes away from actual victims of hate crimes. And then also it can be used that, you know, when there are actual, cases of hate crimes, you know, they can use this, you know, high profile example to be like, look, oh, that was fake. So therefore we don't have a problem, you know? And so that was the fear. And I talked to a friend of mine who's actually from Chicago. He grew up in the West Side of Chicago, and he knows the area pretty well. And he was telling me that, you know, from the get-go, there was things in the story that didn't line up, just knowing the area, knowing the circumstances, you know. And, you know, he was telling me that, you know, some of his friends were like, well, why was he getting, you know, a sandwich at 2 o'clock in the morning? And my friend was like, well, you know, that's, you know, their delis are open. You know, the Subway in that area is open 24 hours. You know, that shouldn't have been the thing that made people confused about the whole situation. You know, allegations that came out about the two men that were arrested, and that, you know, there was a history of correspondence between the two, allegedly with Jesse. You know, that's what he said should have raised some, you know, some red flags. And then also, you know, he was mentioning the repercussions. Like, he hopes that, you know, the allegations are false, just for the same reasons, you know, that most people do. Because, you know, if it you know, turns out to be true that he did fake this, you know, the ramifications are, you know, pretty big. And also, you know, it just you know, detracts from you know, actual victims of those hate crimes. And also, you know, it's, you know, leaving a lot of unanswered questions as of, you know, why would he do this?
Well, I think the police said yesterday through their investigation, the reason given for doing it was money, contract negotiations to get a lot of attention placed on him so he could get more money from the Empire.
I know there was original rumors that he one of the reasons why people were saying that he did it, and this is of course if the allegations are true, one of the potential motives was people were saying that he was going to lose his position at Empire. They're going to write him off the show. I know that my friend that I was talking to, and I haven't seen the tweet, but apparently Empire tweeted out and said that he wasn't going to lose a show, that was false.
He's suspended now.
Yeah, he's suspended now, of course, but before when this was all, you know, going. So I, you know, now with the allegations that, you know, this was because of contract negotiations, you know, still it's just kind of hard to kind of wrap your mind around this if it's true.
But I don't understand. He's still saying he's innocent. Absolutely innocent. He says he's innocent. For the police to hold that press conference, I don't know. You know, I would have to imagine the evidence is pretty strong for the police chief to give his opinion like that, say why he thought this happened, that it was because of contract negotiations, to do all that. Because if he truly is innocent, how do you find a jury now of people who are not swayed one way or another, who didn't see that press conference, who doesn't know the story? And it's not somebody accusing him, it's the police chief in Chicago. So I it's very confusing.
I mean, kind of looking back, like stepping away, it doesn't look good at this point. You know, when you have that press conference and you have, you know, now they put a motive together. You know, the two men that were initially arrested were released, but still, you know, that's weighing. People are coming in, they're weighing in on the situation. And the fact that he was arrested and that he, you know, that he placed, you know, bail, it doesn't look good, period, at this point.
But, Brandy, I don't understand. I guess, okay. It's a fourth degree felony if he is convicted. Now, I think it's a $25,000 fine. I guess you could get up to 4 or 5 years in prison. They said that would be highly unlikely, maybe a year, and maybe no jail time at all because it's his first offense. But, see, this is where I don't understand. What would be the point of putting him in jail? Make a point that you can't do this? I don't understand. There are other ways to punish people, I think, for something like this that would not be so harsh, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know whether he'll get jail time or not. For me, if I were a judge, and I'm clearly not, then, you know, jailing someone to me is more a way to protect the public from somebody who
That's
is
what they say.
Dangerous, which doesn't seem to be the case here. But I do understand wanting to make an example out of this. I hope that people will still understand that while even if this proves to be true, that he faked the whole thing, false allegations like this are still a very, very small percentage of any reporting to police on hate crimes or crimes in general. It's a very, very small percentage of people that lie about these things. And of course, this one's getting a lot of attention because he is very high profile, but it's still out of the ordinary for this sort of thing to happen. And I hope that they'll remember that going forward when there are other victims to consider.
But do you really think, because I understand that's the theory, that's what I kept hearing yesterday, but do you really think this will prevent victims from coming forward? Because the theory is then, is that because he came forward, people automatically don't believe him. But I would think there's evidence to back up why they're not believing him. We believed him for a while.
Yeah, I was going to say initially it seemed like.
Yeah. So why would this deter people who actually are the victims of crimes from coming forth? Because that to me would operate off the premise that he's telling the truth.
It always happens this way historically. It's just statistically true that people are afraid to come forward for things like hate crimes or rapes, especially, I mean, rape is sort of often a special case because there isn't usually, you know, a video of it happening or it quite often comes down to he said, she said. There is not always ample evidence. Hate crimes are usually a little different, but, you know, there are still, I mean, we may have believed him in the beginning, but there were people who did not believe him in the beginning who have been screaming about it from day one and saying it was all made up. And a lot of times that is paired with hate crimes don't happen. This is just another way of these people getting attention. And, you know, if you don't believe that racism is an issue or that hate crimes happen in general, of course you're not going to believe it, you know, whether it's a false allegation or not. And people know that. People who are the potential victims of hate crimes know that there are people out there who are going to say that it's a lie, whether it is or isn't.
Well, people are supposed to have their day in court. They're supposed to have a fair trial, innocent and presumed innocent until proven guilty. When you're a celebrity, boy, that's a little blurry line, because he's certainly being tried in the press. Every channel last night, every show was about this.
Well, it's also you're being tried on social media as well.
Absolutely.
Information goes out there. And, you know, I kind of agree with Brandy to the point as well. You know, some of the concerns I've heard is that, you know, it's not that, you know, the people I've talked to, at least, it's not that they're afraid, you know, people are afraid to come forward. It's that, you know, it's kind of being used as kind of political ammunition at this point, that any of these claims are made, you know, they're fake. And here, you know, here are the 5 or 6 or 7 examples that we have of these high profile cases being fake. You know, and in reality, you know, that is a small percentage of these allegations. So I think that's the fear as well, is that, you know, anytime, you know, someone comes forward now, they're afraid it might be used as political ammunition against them. But you're going to have that fear either way.
I just don't understand. There has to be something wrong with him, because if he did do it, if it was faked, because to go to all that trouble, to do all that, if the end result was just to get a higher contract, I mean, there were better ways to go about that. There are better ways to try to get attention. There are better ways to do it. I don't even understand why this was, why you thought that you thought this was a good way to improve your public standing.
Well, also, how are you gonna, you know, if the allegations are to be, you know, appear to be true, you know, and of course that's what, you know, the Chicago PD believes, you know, and we'll see how it plays out. But, you know, it's more inkling to believe now that, you know, something is obviously going to come with these charges with everything that's going on. You know, how do you bounce back from this as a career? I mean, the president even tweeted about it. You know, how do you bounce back from that?
I think with this crime, I think it's interesting because I think he got exactly what he wanted. Now, it seems bad now, but if he is found guilty and it did happen, yes, he'll pay the fine, and yes, there's a possibility he'll serve jail time. But when that's all over, more people are going to know his name than knew it before. I didn't know who he was before, didn't know what he looked like, didn't know anything about Empire. And this is not a heinous crime. Nobody got murdered. Nobody got raped. It's nothing severe. And you know what? He will command big salaries. We've seen this happen a lot of times with people. G. Gordon Liddy. Funny, to last night, one of the people on CNN talking about this was John Dean. John Dean was in the clink right for a while. Look at him now, best-selling author, paid by CNN. Jesse will be on CNN in 5 years. He'll be a commentator. So, in a weird way, the attention that was given to it did give him what he wanted.
I guess so. I don't know. It didn't really make any sense to me to protest your salary by spending $3,500 to pay someone to do, you know, to commit a crime, essentially.
But that was so strange. But people did follow it, though.
Humans are weird.
People followed it, and now they're following it even more. And nobody will forget this name now. He'll be one of those niche things. And, you know, the court case will end. But people knowing him, you can't take that back. You know, so I think he served his purpose. But I do think there's something wrong there. There's just something wrong that you thought that was the best way to do it, if it does intend to be a false claim. If you've got that much dough, you know, you could have done something. Just tweet something incredibly weird. People will pick up on it. Yeah, so anyway, I don't know. In the end, do you think, from what we've seen so far, I mean, we don't know, but do you think he's telling the truth? Last night, everybody was making their predictions.
I don't think he's telling the truth. I don't think that the Chicago PD would take a risk coming out against a man who could have been the victim of a hate crime. At least I hope they wouldn't, without some ample evidence, you know, to the contrary, because wow, will that look bad for Chicago PD if he turns out to be innocent.
I think that's the spinner in this, is that what they said yesterday and what they did live, and even giving the motive as to why he did it, there has to be some evidence there, I would think, Hassan.
No, I would agree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens. I mean, he'll go on trial unless he decides that he did do it.
Because, I mean, that press release, they solidify their stance. Even though it's, you know, technically still under investigation, they pretty much came out and said, this is what we believe happened. And any charges that will be filed is because of the 3 or 4 points that we made. So,
yeah. And away we go. We'll see what happens with that. A little touch on this one. Roger Stone is now completely gagged, which is going to be awful for him. He won't be able to speak. Do you think his explanation yesterday was genuine?
No.
In that, oh no, I didn't know anything about this. This was a Celtic symbol. If you don't, if people don't know, Roger Stone, he said he didn't advise the president. 50-50. He says sometimes he advised him, sometimes he didn't. But he's got 17 counts against him, and he put up the judge who's overseeing his case with a crosshair in the background, tweeted it out, I think. And so he got called
to
court.
On Instagram. It was not on Twitter. Oh, it was on Instagram. Okay. He's been banned from Twitter.
Oh, and Facebook. So now he's just down to Instagram.
Yes.
So the judge called him in, and he could have ended up in jail. And apparently now if he does violate anything, he will end up in jail. Why do that? Why would you?
He is a provocateur. That's what he's always been. It's innate in his personality. He's eccentric. This is what he does.
It's not provocative to end up in jail.
Look, he has a certain following. He knows how to play to them, and that is exactly what he was doing. And I think he knew the danger presented in that Instagram post, and he disregarded it because that's who he is. That's what he does.
Well, that could come back to bite him in a big way.
Yep.
The person presiding over your case to make her angry. And yesterday, the little proceeding, and you watched it. I saw the comments you were making, Brandy, as it went along. But it seemed like I don't know why he took the stand. He wasn't supposed to. He didn't need to. And I think he made things worse because he took the stand.
He's Roger Stone. Himself he can't contain himself. Well. He has to be the center of attention. Wherever he is, that's exactly the reason that the first order was put into place, because he couldn't resist coming out of the courtroom and standing on the steps and making dramatic proclamations. That's who Roger Stone is. He's not going to change jail
different.
Threat or no.
That's different than attacking the judge in your trial.
But that's how he has played the game before.
Well.
He always, I mean, it's how this sort of clique of people, Trump and Roger Stone and, you know, all of their sort of compatriots, that's what they do. They don't say, oh, well, this is probably not a good idea. This might make me look bad. I'm going to sit back and wait. No, they come out and attack. It's what they do.
Well, their whole strategy has been kind of hack the news cycle and just kind of stay on course. I think that's Roger Stone's, you know, biggest thing was, you know, hack the news cycle, get your message out there, kind of stay on course, you know, be a little bit of a provocateur. I do agree with you, Scott, in the sense that, you know, the whole, you know, attack of the judge on Instagram, you know, that was a little off brand. Maybe that went, you know, crossed the line even for him, you know, but I guess, like I said, I'm not really well versed in this case. What I know of Roger Stone is that he has a tattoo of Richard Nixon on his back.
He does.
And
he does.
That he's known, you know, kind of be provocateur, like Brandy said. And it's just kind of one of those things where, you know, his strategy in the past has just been kind of hack the news cycle, stay on the course. So,
yeah, but if you end up in prison, and essentially now he cannot talk about the case. He cannot do any of those little courtroom step things. Again, whole different attitude leaving the court yesterday. So it didn't help him. It didn't help him at all. And that was probably the only thing he could have done. She was still allowing him to talk about the case off the side of the court. But now he can't do any of that. So he just shot himself in the foot. It was not a bright thing to do.
I don't think that he thought that would be the outcome, though.
Why did he take the stand? His lawyer with the bow tie, why didn't he say, don't do that?
Because he can't resist being the center of attention. That's who he is. But I don't think that Roger Stone thought that this would be the outcome. I think he thought he would get away with it because that historically is how things have worked for him. You know, how old is the man? And he's gotten away with quite a bit of nonsense over time.
I don't know that he's been under 17 criminal indictments, though.
No, but...
That's a little different time to be threatening judges.
Yeah, and I don't think that he, you know, ever thought that he would get to this point. And the judge was very fair with him, I thought. I mean, I don't know that I would have been able to say, oh, we'll give you one more shot, gag order, the end. I think that I would have put him in jail.
I'll tell you who's going to take one more shot. It's Bernie Sanders. Mm-hmm. Coming out of nowhere Tuesday morning, we all thought he might run, but there was really no big announcement on CBS this morning, on Tuesday morning. He's back in, feeling the burn, and just as soon as people said, well, Elizabeth Warren's got that group, and Kamala Harris has got that group, in one day, he raises more money than any of them have ever raised and does it at $27 a pop. No special interest groups. Apparently, Bernie is still viable. What do you think, Hassan?
I mean, there's still a lot of people feeling the burn. You know, like I said, I'm a young guy myself. You know, I don't disclose my political beliefs or anything like that. But my friends I went to college with was not too long ago, to be honest with you. Some of them expressed interest in donating in Bernie's campaign. When I was in college, that was during the 2015, you know, presidential run. You know, Bernie was in the primary, Hillary was in the primary, Trump was in the primary, Ted Cruz was in the primary. It was big. And especially at my university, you saw, you know, people campaign for all different kinds of candidates. We had people out for the third party candidates. You know, there was a guy who used to walk around campus with a burlap sack and had these giant green Jill Stein pins. Yeah. You know, there was a libertarian table, you know, that was there. You know, they had stickers like "Big Government Sucks." I remember that. And they had like pictures of Frank Underwood and the character in that TV show on Netflix show. You know what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. House of Cards. Yeah, they had like stickers of his face talking about, you know, "Big Government Sucks." There were people that were like big Hillary Clinton people. There were people that were big Bernie people. And I had some of my friends from those days. They were talking about, you know, "Did you hear about Bernie Sanders running?" "Yeah, well, hey, you know, I don't really like the other candidates, so I donate to his campaign." So I still think he has that college support, or the people who support him in 2015, I think they haven't really left that. We're going to have to see if he's going to run into the same problems that he did in 2015 and see if he can, you know, move his message outside that demographic of young millennials, you know, mostly college age, you know, kids.
You know, I don't know if he needs to, though, at this point, because it seems to me like the people who now are voting in the Democratic primary, the people who are protesting, the people who are out, seems to be that group. It certainly does. I think he certainly is a spoiler in the Democratic primary, because we know now who he is, we know his age, we know what happened last time, we know his beliefs, we know about democratic socialism, we know he's actually a registered independent, and people don't care. He still raises more than any other Democrat as he gets in the race. So I think the Democrats should pay him some attention.
But how's that pull into other voters? That's always been my big question as well. As I agree with you. I think Democrats should pay attention. But, you know, we saw a wave of Bernie-inspired politicians after his presidential run, right? And, you know, to be honest with you, a lot of this progressive candidates, they didn't win the races. I mean, some came pretty close. Others did succeed, right? You know, what we saw in New York. And now, right, we're seeing with, you know, the Green New Deal or... What's it called?
Yeah, the Green Deal.
The Green Deal.
The Green Deal.
You know, yeah.
The Green Deal.
And what we're seeing with that, so it will be interesting to see if, you know, over time, if people are going to kind of build up, because these things don't happen overnight, right? So, you know, because I know the momentum after him, it didn't seem like it kind of held, but it'll be interesting to see if he's able to, you know, in light of, you know, recent political events, if he's able to kind of maintain that focus, because it seems like there's kind of been a thing in the Democratic Party where, you know, do we embrace you know, these progressive candidates, do we kind of keep, you know, kind of the moderate centrism of the party? You know, it seems to be in certain cases a kind of some friction between, you know.
Well, there's going to be a big problem because there are some things that have changed in the way the Democrats are doing their primary. The superdelegates are gone. So that's no long. It's going to be whoever gets the most delegates, whoever gets the popular votes in these states is going to be the candidate. That really didn't matter last time. Before they got to the super delegates, Hillary had more delegates than Bernie, so she still would have been the candidate. So that's not a big thing. But prior to that in the Democratic Party, because the Republicans don't have superdelegates, Hillary and Obama came to the final primary close, and the superdelegates are what swung it for Obama. Not going to happen this time. And when you've got 1,800 people running on the Democratic side, that could mean something.
Well, I mean, we saw the same thing. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, you're fine.
Sorry. Tell me if I'm
usually
talking
she's not this nice. She doesn't.
That is not
you
true.
Always interrupt me.
How dare you?
Always interrupt me.
No, I feel bad. Let me know if I'm talking
no,
too
go
much.
Ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was just saying, when we saw the same thing on the Republican side, though, that was the joke for the presidential campaign for the Republican side. I remember when I was in college and I would talk to Republicans, Democrats, people in between, people that are, you know, neoconservatives, you know, whatever the, you know, their political beliefs were, the whole joke was there's 1,000 people running on the Republican side, right? And then, you know, for a while there, it seemed like Marco Rubio had a chance, you know.
Cruz.
Bush. Well, it seemed like Bush kind of fizzled out towards the end. Ted Cruz, I was surprised he actually made it as far as he did. Kasich, you know, really he pretty much pulled very well with Ohioans, but he had a really hard time, you know, kind of getting out of that Ohio bubble.
Still does.
I think Sherrod Brown might have that problem too.
I think so too. When people keep mentioning Sherrod Brown, I mean, nice man, been on the show, easy to talk to, but do people know him in New Hampshire? Do people know him in Iowa? Do people know him in, I don't know if they do. But they know Bernie.
Yeah.
They know Bernie, and that's where the $27 thing comes from.
I feel like I have a little bit of a unique perspective on Bernie because I did vote for him in the last primary, and I don't know that I'm going to vote for him this time. So I think there's got to be more people like me. I can't possibly be the only one. I'm not that special. You know, there have to be other people who voted for Bernie previously and have since maybe are not so high on him this time. We'll see. I'm not saying that I'm not going to vote for him. I think it's too early for any of us to lock in and make a solid decision. There's a lot more that I want to hear on policy and everything.
There was an opinion piece on one of the news websites right after this happened, and right after he raised all this money, that was if Bernie can run again and raise this type of money, then Hillary can run again and raise this type of money, because she's got the same case, only a better case. The reasoning was that Hillary beat Bernie in the primary, that Hillary raised more money than Bernie last time, that Hillary's got a real complaint because of the upcoming Mueller report and everything we've learned since the election, that she did get 3 million more votes than Donald Trump, and that she is younger. She's 7 years younger than Bernie Sanders is, I believe. So there is this idea, and that she's not closing the door, that every time somebody says she's going to run again, she never says no. Mm-hmm. She never says no. And that's something to keep an eye on. Now, another political candidate, Kamala Harris, who I think was seen as the front runner before Bernie got into this thing, her father this week came on the scene. He's a professor at, I think, Stanford. Somebody will correct me if I'm wrong. But he is a professor, and he came out and did not like the idea of the interview she did on the Breakfast Club show, where she talked about using marijuana when she was in college. And he said that's a stereotype of Jamaicans, and I don't care, that's awful. And he gave a real long dissertation about why his daughter should not have done this. Now, yes, this is political, but this also is, see, your family, in the end, will, even your own father, should he have done this? Even if he thought it. Couldn't he call her on the phone and say this instead of releasing it to the press?
Well, I
wouldn't want to be at their Thanksgiving
table. I would be terrified to think of what my father would do if I were running for president. But
he wouldn't call you first.
Oh, God, no.
Okay. Well, see, but doesn't that indicate a bad relationship?
Not necessarily. I mean, I think I saw immediately after that interview, there was a little bit of backlash from people, from progressives, from Democrats, saying, oh, she kind of stepped in it there. You know, that's not cool. We don't want to see that kind of behavior from our candidates. And you know, I...
But your father shouldn't be the lead critic. Let people be the critic of it. But it's your father. And I don't even know that they're estranged. What did you make of it, Hassan?
Well, I actually had one question. You know, what were, because I understand what the Republican argument was, and I know the Washington Times did like a couple stories about that interview as well. But what were some like progressives and some fellow Democrats were saying? What were their criticisms of that?
Well, it was the same as her father, that it was a stereotype of Jamaicans, and that as progressives, as liberals, that we should not be using those stereotypes, even in a joking manner, because that is something that we would, you know, knock a Republican for, or knock somebody on the other side of the table for. So we don't want to do that ourselves. It smacks a little bit racist. Now, they're not calling Kamala Harris racist because it's part of her heritage, so it's a different deal. But they don't want to hear stereotypes from me about Hungarian people any more than they want to hear.
But did she want to lie? I mean, see, that's the that was the alternative.
It wasn't that she had came out and said, "I smoked weed." It was that she said it. She said something to the effect of, "Come on, I'm Jamaican. You know, of course I've smoked it."
Oh, that's the,
and that was the
I
point
think she was
at
making
which
a
they
joke.
Were. Yes, of course it was.
You can't
a joke.
Make a joke.
Not about race. Come on.
But that's not...
They're not funny. So, I mean, it was different for her because it is part of her heritage. So it's not people aren't coming out and saying, you know, she's racist against Jamaicans because she's not. But that was the argument, was that they don't want to hear jokes by playing into these stereotypes about people's ethnicities.
But you know, and I remember it, Reagan, Mondale. Mondale was running around Reagan in 1984 when they were running against each other, and the knock on Reagan was, he's too old, he's getting forgetful, he's should not be the president. And one line turned it around in that debate when they asked Reagan about age, the moderators did.
Mm-hmm.
They said, "Are you too old to be president?" And he said, "I am not going to let age become the main issue of this campaign. I am not going to let my opponent's youth and inexperience prohibit this." And everybody laughed. It was
right.
A joke. And they were talking about older people. He was making light of it, and he won 49 states. You got to have a sense of humor. Does everybody have to be so...
I'm just telling... Hassan asked what was the progressive
view. Yeah, to be fair, I did
view.
Ask. Yeah.
Yes, but he
and
said...
That's what I was...
That,
I didn't say
answer.
I believed it.
No,
I'm
but
just saying...
But, I mean, her father is what I'm... You, people can criticize her. That's life. You put yourself out there when you run for office. But if the father... I mean, that's an odd person to be doing the criticism.
I think if you feel like your child running for office is somehow, I don't know how to
wouldn't
say
you tell
somehow,
your child, or would you go tell me?
Yes, but who's to say he didn't? And then she said, "Oh, Dad, lighten up."
And he goes,
you know,
to the press.
And then he's like, "Fine, if you're gonna keep saying this, I'm gonna go out and tell people how I actually feel about it." Because if you feel like she's in some way demeaning your culture, you know, I mean, that's not something that you're going to just twiddle your thumbs about, I guess. I don't know.
I mean, I guess one thing is we don't know what, you know, what the relationship is, what the family history is there. And also, you know, from what we were talking about before, it's just families do crazy things. You know, they do.
Well, isn't this the Meghan Markle syndrome? Right before the royal wedding, all of a sudden her father's out there selling this, selling that. And then what happened? He got disinvited. Did he ever have that heart surgery he was going to have? I don't think so.
I have no idea.
Well, I know there was also there, and I don't want to compare the two cases, but also there, what my understanding was that there was, you know, she was estranged from her father. You know, the family had this kind of hostile relationship. You know, he had a history of kind of coming in and out and doing things like this, you know, and there was always, you know, there was speculation of, you know, what's he going to do now, you know, and that was one thing. And that's something that I believe she said in the British press, you know. And then when that all happened, he got disinvited because they just didn't want to deal with that. And they weren't, you know, close at that point anymore because of, I guess, some past things. That's what I've heard. This is all hearsay. This
well, see,
is all
that's
the British
it,
past.
That,
yeah.
I think there has to be a rift here because
there
you
doesn't,
would,
though. I think that
there's a rift
any,
now.
Look, I just interrupted
there's a,
him.
You did. So you always do. There's a rift now. There's a rift now.
Well,
I
there might be
you.
Now, but I think that in situations of high tension, marriages, deaths, running for president, that things that wouldn't necessarily otherwise be a problem tend to get overblown and I don't know why it happens, but everyone's just very emotional and geared up, and they do things that otherwise they wouldn't do. The worst comes out in
but
people.
They go to people that it doesn't make any sense to go to. They go to ex-wives. They go to people who haven't been in contact with the person for years, people they've been in high school with, in college. That makes no sense to me. There could be a fray in the relationship, and if there's a fray in the relationship for any reason, that may not make them give the best opinion of that person in that particular time.
Mm-hmm.
Or to be devil's advocate, he could have been upset about it. Someone contacted him, and you know what? You know, I'm going to go on here, and I'm going to, you know, speak my two cents. You know, like I said, people do silly things. You know, people do weird things, you know. And I don't know if it was weird or not, you know. Like,
I think she probably thinks it was weird.
Yeah. Like I, don't, like I said, I don't know what the relationship is. I don't know the history there, you know. But it could just be that simple that, you know, he is a Stanford professor and that they did reach out to him and he gave, you know, he spoke his mind, you know. And maybe that's, you know, his past is, you know, speaking his mind. You know, I don't know. So either way, it seemed like one of the stories that someone picked up on it, and they talked about it, and now with the new presidential candidates coming in and everything, it seemed to kind of like get buried under the kind of the media cycle. Just like when the Washington Times wrote an article about how she wasn't in college when Tupac and Biggie's music was out there, because I guess in the interview she mentioned that she had smoked weed and she listened to Tupac and Biggie, and that story got buried under the news cycle because there's other things to focus on.
I hate to go back to Hillary Clinton and Ronald Reagan here, but Reagan had an ex-wife. The first president, I believe, who had an ex-wife, Jane Wyman, who was on a hit television series at that time, Falcon Crest. And she would not do interviews because she knew that question was coming. Why did the relationship with Ronald Reagan, even though she was the ex-wife and he was remarried and she wasn't first lady, she took the high road. I'm sure there obviously was a problem there. And Hillary Clinton in the last election, they went and talked to Bill's mistresses. Now, how do you think Bill's mistresses feel about Hillary Clinton? I mean, get real. I mean, this is insane to me that if there is a rift, then it's not odd that he would say it. If there isn't a rift, there is one now. So why do it? Like all these, like the first story we started with, Jesse Smollett. His seat, I have no idea who he, I'm going to learn his name. But like his people on Empire, now right now they're probably ticked. Now they would not be the best people to go to say, well, what kind of guy was he?
Well, I think, of course, as the greater public, we are fascinated always by anything dramatic or you know,
family squabbles.
But it is important with people who are going to be leading our country to understand, and I know I've made this point before, that nobody is coming in as a savior. There is not a human being on this planet who could become president of the United States who is going to be perfect and is never going to make a mistake. And so it's important for us to understand all of the sides of somebody's personality, the things that are their weaknesses, the things that, the mistakes they're going to make, and the good parts of them. We're going to see the good parts of them. They're going to make sure of that. But, you know, we need to kind of round it out. And talking to people who have had a less than pleasant experience with them kind of helps us round out. Now, of course, you have to consider the source and understand where they're coming from, but it does help us to round them out as human beings so that we don't, you know, put people on pedestals and think that they're going to save the world.
I don't think that it's wrong if people want to criticize her for doing it. I think it's wrong that her father criticized her for doing it, because that's the story. The story is not that she was criticized for doing it.
Right.
The story is that her father criticized her for doing it, and that's a difference. Did anybody go to any other professors who were Jamaican and ask them what they thought about this whole thing?
Oh, I don't know. That's a good question.
Of course, nobody did. Even know. But they went to her father, so that's the point, and that's the story.
Well, also, you know, there's a viralness to it as well. Like, it becomes viral, right? So the interview comes, you know, we're in the midst of, you know, a marijuana legalization debate. That's been something that's on the table. You know, obviously, you know, progressive candidates are kind of championing that. And then, you know, they talk about The Breakfast Club, which is a very popular show. I listen to The Breakfast Club, you know, and, you know, they did the interview and then everyone's just talking about that one thing, you know.
But it's very interesting to me that when they went back to him to get a follow-up on it, he wouldn't talk to them then. All of a sudden, he's all quiet. I think he got a call.
Or he realized.
Or he realized what he did. Yeah, he shouldn't have done it. Maybe that was a big mistake.
Yeah.
You shouldn't do it.
I don't know.
Well,
I don't think I would have done that to my kids. I definitely would have called him and raked him over the coals privately.
See?
But.
So you agree.
But I think in the grand scheme of things, like, it's going to get sweeped under the news cycle and we're going to forget about it in 2 or 3 months, you know?
Unless he decides to go out and do something else like that.
Or unless the president starts tweeting about it.
Well, he might. You never
even
know.
Then.
got a lot of things on the table. We'll spend our last 10 minutes here, which we usually do, on more fun stories. And I think this is an interesting one. Ah, Meghan Markle. Nice little. She had a baby shower this week in New York, and apparently it cost some very big bucks. Boy. But Serena Williams, I heard yesterday, I didn't realize this. She paid the bill. $250,000, I think, is what the baby shower was. I think that's what I heard.
That's a very generous gift.
But people were all over her because she had this big baby shower. Who cares?
If rich she wants people to are going to rich.
Now, see, but that's a stereotype. She wasn't rich before this whole... She was just a working actress.
No, but she is now.
Well, what if she'd had the baby shower before she became part of the royal family?
I don't think it'd
be... For the royal baby?
It wouldn't be a story. You got it. It would not be a story.
Also, I don't think it would be $250,000.
Yeah, exactly. It might have been. For a baby shower?
So it's a problem that it was 200. That's the problem.
No,
I don't think
I'm
it's
not
a
saying
problem.
There is a problem.
I don't have a problem with
it. Why was it a story? Because
people
it was.
People love to get inside.
People like being all over
the
this
rich
woman.
World.
They loved
yes,
it. They loved
to
nag
like
it. I don't know what it is about her.
But it's not
she
just her.
Speaks.
They were the same way with Diana. And, I mean,
over
they're a
baby a
little
shower?
I mean, Kate, they. Everything from how much her hair costs to what she eats to
she's got
her
a lot
shoes.
Of Hollywood I mean, friends. She had to have, I think Oprah was there.
Well, okay, so you said that Serena Williams paid for the baby shower.
But I understand.
And if that happened before, right, you know, she's an actress, she has friends, you know, and Serena Williams is like, you know what, you know, this is your first baby shower, we're going to go out, $250,000. It wouldn't be a story because, you know, unless she's like a huge Hollywood actress, you know, people would be like, okay, that's interesting. But, you know, people throw elaborate parties all the time. They have, you know, elaborate gifts and things like that. You know, what makes this actress any special at this point, right? Is the fact that she's part of the royal family. And, you know, like you said, you know, people gravitate towards that, you know.
But it brought criticism. This is what the problem. Okay, she had a big baby shower. A lot of famous people were there.
No matter what she does, she's going to bring criticism at this point.
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, I don't understand. A baby shower is pretty middle of the road. What is, there's nothing political about that. There's nothing one side or the other. It's not like something bad happened there.
Well, you know how people are. You know, they're, you know, especially it's a high profile case, you know, it's
It's got to be jealousy, though. Yeah. It's got to be some jealousy unraveled
but
in that.
I think, I mean, who is the criticism coming from? Because I know that...
You criticized it.
I didn't criticize it.
You said,
it.
Why such a big...
No, I can't imagine her having a $250,000 baby shower if she weren't
on
royalty.
Also, she accepted gifts. I heard that was another big thing. If somebody wants to bring a blender, who cares?
Everyone accepts gifts at a baby shower.
Well,
that's what a baby shower is.
She was getting criticized for it because she's got money. You shouldn't bring gifts.
Well, I think it's also people are criticizing. And I don't know this, but I guess, like, you know, rationally speaking, it'd be like the. And I'm sorry, I didn't mean
no,
to interrupt
you're fine.
I'm terrible on a radio setting.
That's just good. That's the way it is.
That's what we do on here.
What we do.
I feel like I'm talking too much. I'm talking over people. But I would assume that, you know, rationally speaking, you know, people would be like, well, you know, they're, you know, flying the wealth, the money can go somewhere else and go to a charitable cause. You know, do you really need $250,000 for a baby shower? I've been to plenty of baby showers where it wasn't $250,000.
But know, Oprah wasn't at your baby shower. That's the difference. You got to have
that. Exactly.
Go big or go home.
And this is not my belief. I'm just saying, like, rationally playing devil's advocate, I can imagine that could probably be one of the responses to it.
Listen, in Manhattan, the room probably cost $100,000.
Probably.
Well, there's a difference between how we feel about the royal family here in the United States and how the British feel about the royal family. And I bet that their media is much
she's
more critical
American.
Of her. Yes, she's American, but she's now also a British
we
royal.
We should be proud of that. We broke in.
We're not. That's what I'm saying. I don't think it's mostly coming from American media, the criticisms. We love the royals here.
Oh, no, I think that's
but
wrong.
But in Britain, they have a different take on them.
I think British media is being much easier on her. I think we're the ones who are complaining.
Oh, I'll have to look and
look,
see.
Look into that, because I think that's what I'm hearing.
All I know is I want to go to that baby shower.
Well, you want to go to the baby shower?
It seems pretty cool.
What would you take as a gift?
Celebrities.
I mean, when I could afford a blender.
What you do? You know? A blender.
I'd be like, oh, hey, it's your old pal Hassan. I haven't seen you forever. See? Well, thanks for inviting me. Here's this blender. Ha, ha, ha. See? I'm just a Midwest guy.
This was no big deal. I hate the idea of going to anything like that. Because I think it is a little, you know, what am I going to talk to somebody at a baby shower about? Nothing.
Well, it's usually...
There's nothing.
Yeah.
You can talk about politics and be that guy.
Really? No, I wouldn't want to go. I just would not want to go. Those things, to me, creating conversations like about the weather. Oh, how you doing? How you been? No.
That's my bread and butter, you know?
Is that your whole thing?
Oh, yeah.
You're just
thing.
A conversationalist. Go ahead.
My whole thing, oh, hey. Oh, it's getting... What about this weather? It's getting warm. I hate the cold.
It's going to be a wonderful thing. Maybe we can get you an invitation to the next one. Because it's just about more than one kid, so there you go. Those Royals like to pop them out.
Well, what about this traffic? I'm from New York.
Exactly right.
Make it time, make it, right?
Phony. Because nobody really cares about the weather. Nobody.
Charlie does.
Charlie does, but Charlie criticizes the weather. Charlie criticizes. Really quickly, I saw this and I thought this fact was unbelievable. People who say they have fallen in love, 1 in 50 fall in love on airplanes.
Weird.
Why?
I guess you're in close quarters. And
1 in 50, think about that.
Well, all studies have shown that the best way to get somebody to fall in love with you is to look them in the eyes and share intimate stories about your life for like 4 minutes or something. It's an actual study, I swear
to you.
And I
think
that on
an airplane.
You could fall
in love at the baby shower. Look them in the eye. And make that small talk work.
I'm a very awkward person.
It's not small talk. That's the thing. You have to share details
about
your...
On an airplane ride?
It could happen, especially if you're, like, imagine someone is scared of flying, right? And they start talking to the person next to them.
Oh, I don't
want
to sit next to that person.
You just shared a fear with them. So that's an intimate detail about your life. And then you strike up a conversation and you're stuck on a flight with each other. I can see how it would happen.
No.
See, this is why I'm going to die alone, right? While I'm on an airplane, I put my headphones in. I have my blanket over my head. I'm like, don't talk to me.
Don't talk to me. See, yeah. Now that becomes a rough conversation. 1 in 50. I think it's
you're
because...
You're going to be Scott.
You know, I think it's because they have barf bags. I think that's why that happens on an airplane. A lot of people are sick after they fall in love. They get really, really sick.
He has such a weird view of love and marriage.
Well, what is love?
Well, it's not barfing into a barf bag.
I've said, give me the definition. You've yet to do this.
It's a chemical reaction in the brain. It's
is that
sharing...
called depression?
No.
Have you never been in love before?
Oh, well. Have you?
There's the question. See, he didn't answer.
See, nobody wants to answer that question.
I've been in love there.
Have you?
I answered
well,
it.
You're married.
Of course.
So, of course, you're going to err on the side of love.
I was in love before I was married.
With somebody else?
Yes.
Ooh, I hope your husband doesn't hear this program.
He's aware of it.
He's aware of it?
I mean, you'd...
But what... Okay, so then you know what it is. So what is it? If you've been in love twice...
It's sharing intimate parts of your life with somebody else and wanting to spend that time together.
Nobody wants to know.
Trusting in someone else to share those things.
People just want somebody to take care of you when you're old. And lonely.
I don't think
decrepit.
Anyone thinks that far ahead when it comes to
love. I think we should call Scott Scrooge. That should be
your
name.
Do people really believe that this is going to happen one day? I mean, honest to goodness.
Bah humbug.
Hassan, you have to understand, my children know that when they turn on this radio show, there is going to be a segment about love and or marriage, and Scott is going to hate on it.
Well, I am. I am because I believe that people are mystified by the fact. There's always a study on love. Like this one. Where did this? I didn't make this story up. 1 in 50 people fall in love on airplanes. Why is that even
is
a study? Who did that study?
United Airlines.
That's
my guess.
Hey, fly the friendly skies.
They're going to use that as their marketing tool.
Buy a ticket.
But I mean, love to me is time. It's a time frame. Because you fell out of love with that first person, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
There you go. So what happens is eventually love ends. The person either dies or you get bored with them and you don't want to talk to them anymore.
But life ends. You don't hate on life.
That's what people do.
Well, no, but I'm talking specifically, Scott.
No, I would like to live as long as I could, but I don't necessarily know. I think love sometimes turns to a problem, and that shortens your life because of stress. Have you ever asked somebody who's married how things are going, and they say, oh, awful? No.
Yes.
No. Well, your friends, maybe, but no, the people I talk to.
I have very honest friends.
Like I always say, if you go to Facebook and you see somebody talking about how wonderful their husband is or how wonderful their wife is or boyfriend or girlfriend, 7 days you'll see a breakup on the way or divorce papers. It's all a smoke
screen. I say the same thing about people who renew their vows. It doesn't happen every time, but most of the time when somebody renews their vows, they're headed for divorce.
Who hurt you people?
Love is an anomaly.
We can't. We have to protect him.
Never in love.
See, I'm playing devil's advocate.
Young.
I agree with you, Scott.
Yes, bingo.
Love doesn't exist.
Love doesn't exist. It's all over. Well, this has been a fun conversation, that's for sure, because you really think that people fall in love in airplanes? That's the question?
Sure, I can see how it would happen.
No. People don't want to be bothered on airlines.
Why would the study lie?
Because they make up these things. This is all just for conversation so we have time filler so we can get to the next show.
Oh, my goodness.
People fell in love in the grocery store.
No, I actually know a couple who fell in love on a plane.
In the grocery store?
I would say so.
Well, that shoots your whole eye contact thing away. Who's making eye contact and having all this conversation in the grocery
store? Scott, you are not a woman. You do not understand. Everyone will make eye contact with
really?
You in the grocery store.
Oh,
yes.
I just get in and get out.
I just had an incident, and my mother-in-law was a witness.
Somebody was making eye contact with you?
No, somebody...
making eye contact with her?
Well, more than eye contact. Yeah, so...
In the grocery?
Not in the grocery store, but everywhere
well,
you
what's
go...
What's this have to do with the grocery store?
What I'm saying is that...
Where'd you go?
I'm not going to say, because I don't want to out this poor person, but... everywhere you go, I think it's different for men. I think that women are less likely to approach men and in that way, but I've been at the cemetery and been approached. I've been at the grocery store and been approached and followed and everything else. Everywhere I go. And it's not just me, it's women in general.
I guess that's a good place to go looking for relationships, the cemetery, you know, they're free.
Well, that
they're putting flowers
like,
on the thing.
We're in a cemetery, man. What if I'm here grieving? This is not the place.
They're there to clear your eyes and make eye contact go to the IHOP afterwards, I guess. I don't know.
I lived in D.C. for three months in the summer of 2016. I had an internship there, and I remember I went to – so at that time it was high of the political season – and there was talks of Bernie, you know, when is he going to kind of drop out of the race? Because at that time, it didn't seem like he won the primary. And he had a rally on the outskirts of D.C. So I took, I asked my boss, I got off work early. I went on the subway. I took the train, took the line all the way to the arena where it was at. And then when I came back, it was me, another guy, because it was kind of late and I had spent some time in the area because I'd never been in that part of DC before. So after the rally, I hung out around the neighborhood a little bit, got something to eat. I came back. It was probably in the evening. There was only four people waiting for the train. It was me, some other guy, and these two young kids. And the two young kids were just making out the entire time. And me and the guy were just looking at each other like I was angry. I felt like an old man.
Show off, doesn't you? You don't want to see people's love. You don't want to see all that.
No, I just,
that's not love anyway. That's just disgusting. What are people doing?
It's not disgusting. Huh? They're just two people
you
making
should say
out.
Stop that.
Well, they should do it in the privacy of their own home.
You don't go out in public and do that. Nobody wants to see that. It's cold
and
flu season.
It's not my thing.
It wasn't like they're holding hands or they did a little
love. You can hold hands.
It was like they're like making out.
Once you do that, it's over.
Hey, it's late at night. They were probably
and they were doing it like 3 feet, 4 feet away from me. I was just like, what's going on? So I literally just and this guy, he was just sitting there next to me, and I got up and I just started walking around pretending I was on my phone, and then the other guy, he was just like completely oblivious. Like at first we glanced at each other, and afterwards he was just kind of completely oblivious to what was going on. And they didn't stop until the train came. And it wasn't that I was being creepy, I was staring at them. It was literally I walked around for a while, came back.
It kept going, huh?
Yeah, it kept going. Like the train had literally came, we were walking in, and then eventually they got up and went on the train. It was terrible.
They broke it up. Man. Again, why 1 in 50 people fall in love on an airplane? The barf bag. See, he needed one there in the train depot.
No.
It's all about bad travel. All right, Brandy, it's always fun. Hassan, you'll have to come back and join us again. Yeah. It's been a lot of fun. I'll be coming up in about 5 minutes. We got Lana Kawana's tickets to give away for Pancake Day, and Charlie's out, so I will be sitting in for him 5 minutes. Be right back.
Creating unique environments. Facebook, Meadows Lawn Care.